Recent news stories have ranged from the absurd to the inane, and most recently, to horror. The famed neurosurgeon and current presidential candidate, Dr. Ben Carson, confirmed that decades later he continues to believe, despite all evidence to the contrary, that the Egyptian pyramids were built not as graves for the pharaohs, but instead were built to store grain by Joseph, a character in the biblical book of Genesis. That's absurd. There's also been a lot of inane hubbub about Starbucks holiday cup design, much of which has been an exercise in missing the point. Jesus didn't come to be the patron saint of fourth quarter earnings, and the way to keep the Christ in Christmas has nothing to do with Starbucks and everything to do with giving food to the hungry, clothing the naked, and visiting the sick and imprisoned. But a week of silly headlines descended into horror on Friday evening with the news of the terrorist attacks in Paris. As I've reflected on these headlines, allow me a few moments to take the risk of describing a common thread linking these three news stories, which I will then contrast with the alternative worldview of Peter Singer's ethics. To be clear, by no means am I equating these three stories, but I do see all three as on different points on the same long spectrum of fundamentalism. About 10 years ago, a team of researchers at the University of Chicago concluded a decade-long study called the Fundamentalism Project, in which they explored the family resemblances between the fundamentalisms in the world's religions. In each case, they found a reactive, absolutist, comprehensive mode of anti-secular religious activism. Reactive, absolutist, and comprehensive. Reactive in the sense of not responding from our best selves, but just reacting instantly. Absolutist, either or, not both and. And comprehensive, a full world view that accounts for everything allegedly and makes no room for other perspectives, has no what is called epistemic humility, so humility about our own finitude and the limits of what we can know. I'll confess, however, that having been raised in a conservative Christian context, I can really understand how a brilliant, gifted, path-breaking neurosurgeons such as Dr. Ben Carson can come to think that the pyramids were built by the biblical patriarch Joseph. When one is raised to think that the center of history, that literally, metaphysically, life, the universe, and everything changed with the death and resurrection of Jesus of Nazareth, then everything about the Bible begins to take on outsized importance. On the silly side of the spectrum, such a worldview can lead one to become deeply, mortally offended at the secularization of happy holidays over Merry Christmas. On the far side of the spectrum, violent religious extremists can be led to target Paris in particular, that emblem of modern, secular, Enlightenment values of liberté, égalité, fraternity. Liberty, equality, fraternity, those cornerstones of our sixth UU principle of the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice, not for some, but for all. So from a fundamentalist perspective, to hear Peter Singer talk of unsanctifying human life, to talk about things like how you might have death with dignity, or to talk about certain ways of approaching reproductive justice, feels deeply threatening to core religious values of some individuals and groups. Singer's point, of course, is not that human life is unimportant, but rather that it is not an unalloyed good, and that there are many competing values that must be weighed against one another. For Singer, the capacity of animals to experience suffering must be weighed against the different but still very real capacity of humans to experience suffering, and one's quality of life must also be factored into the equation. But from the perspective of fundamentalist Christianity, fundamentalist Islam, and other fundamentalisms, there is only one legitimate worldview, their own. Consider, for instance, William Butler Yeats's poetic reflections on what it can feel like when a pluralistic postmodern worldview threatens the coherency of a tribalistic fundamentalist view of the world. Yeats writes, "Turning and turning in the widening gyre, the falcon cannot hear the falconer. Things fall apart, the center cannot hold, mere anarchy is loosed upon the world, the blood-dim tide is loosed, and everywhere the ceremony of innocence is drowned. The best lack all conviction, and the worst are full of passionate intensity." The liberal turn in religion of which Unitarian Universalism is a part is an attempt to create meaningful lives and to build diverse, compassionate, beloved communities in a world in which the traditional center has fallen out. The shift is from authority grounded in community and hierarchy and tradition to authority grounded in reason, what is logical, to authority grounded in firsthand experience, what you know for yourself or can prove with a scientific method. Singer challenges us to see that the old exclusivistic, tribalistic worldviews that, as they fall away, retreating into fundamentalism is not the only recourse. There are ways to live responsibly and ethically that take fully into account that we are part not of a 6,000-year-old creation story, but of a 13.8-billion-year-old evolutionary process. That our planet is not at the center of the universe. Even our galaxy is merely one among more than 100 billion galaxies in the universe. We humans are not uniquely special creations who are a little lower than the angels. We are merely a little higher than the apes. We are deeply within the animal kingdom and deeply interconnected with the ecosystems of this planet. The fundamentalist perspective at its most extreme is willing to kill those viewed as heretics to protect God's honor. But their error is projecting the God of their understanding as the God of the universe. As the spiritual writer Anne Lamott has said, you can safely assume you have created God in your own image when it turns out that God conveniently hates all the same people you do. That being said, allow me to begin to shift our perspective toward the contrasting worldview of wrestling with Peter Singer's ethics, which focuses on reducing the amount of suffering in the world for all sentient beings. Now, I said a lot in my previous sermon in September about reducing the suffering of animals and how we can compare and contrast the capacity of animals to experience suffering with the capacity of humans and putting that on a spectrum. So for now, I would like to turn our attention to how we use our reason and experience, how combined with our modern scientific understanding, to how that might help us with alleviating human suffering on this planet. Now, a fundamentalist worldview might lead one to think that wealth inequality isn't really a problem, that we should instead literally store up treasures in heaven for the afterlife, where there will allegedly be streets paved with gold for everyone, mansions for everyone, 72 virgins, depending on what you're into, I guess. But Singer shares with many UUs a focus on alleviating suffering in this world and on improving life here. And now, Singer has long been associated with his landmark 1975 book, Animal Liberation, which helped launch the modern animal rights movement. And he continues to share those concerns, but his last two books have been accessible and fascinating explorations of what an evidence-based approach might tell us about how best to alleviate suffering for the poorest humans on our planet. Those two books are The Life You Can Save, How to Do Your Part to Ending World Poverty, and The Most Good You Can Do, How Effective Altruism is Changing Our Ideas About How to Live Ethically. Globally, we have more than 7 billion people on this planet, and there are about a little over 1 billion who live in what could be called extreme poverty, which means they are living on less than $1.53 per day. That figure is adjusted such that the currency in the country in which the person lives buys the same amount of food and other essentials that one can buy for $1.53 in the United States in the year 2014. Could you imagine living and providing for your family on $1.53 per day? The answer is you can't. This level of absolute poverty means that you and your family will go without basic minimum needs for human health. In contrast, as harsh and as terrible as poverty continues to be in this country, it is a relative poverty compared to the absolute poverty that a little more than 1 billion people live in every day on this planet. To a much greater extent, impoverished Americans have access to safe drinking water, to free schooling for their children, to free health care through Medicaid, and in many cases, subsidized housing. That doesn't mean that that makes your life easy, but it means that your life is easier than the 1 billion people who live in extreme poverty. So with his typical Spock-like logic, Singer challenges many of our typical approaches to helping others in light of these facts. You may have other criteria, but for Singer, reducing the most amount of suffering and doing the most good you can do is centrally important if you are seeking to live ethically. Along these lines, let me give you just two examples. And as you hear these, you'll see that Singer, one of the reasons I like at least wrestling with his ethics is he is so unafraid of taking on what could be called sacred cows. You know, the saying goes, sacred cows make gourmet burgers. So you can see, you know, for example, who wants to hate on the Make-A-Wish Foundation? Peter Singer wants to hate on the Make-A-Wish Foundation, so I'll give you an example. First, he points out that through the Make-A-Wish Foundation, the average cost of making a child's wish come true is about $7,500. For that same amount of money, the Against Malaria Foundation could save the lives of at least 3 children and maybe many more. For Singer, saving a child's life has to be better than fulfilling a child's wish to be Batkit. If Miles Scott's parents had been offered that choice, Batkit for a day or cure their son's leukemia, they surely would have chosen the cure. When more than one child's life can be saved, for Singer, the choice is even clearer. The appeal of the Make-A-Wish Foundation is undeniable, but Singer challenges us to take a step back and reflect on what is actually the most good we can do. If you think of Maslow's hierarchy, that pyramid that says the foundation of the pyramid, you know, the top of the pyramid is self-actualization and giving back to others. The bottom rung of the pyramid is, you know, do you have a simple, decent place to live? Do you have enough food and water? Do you have access to healthcare and education? What he's saying is, until that bottom rung on the healthcare is taken care of for every human being, you know, once that's done, then we can talk about the other stuff. But let's start with getting the bottom floor of Maslow's hierarchy taken care of for everyone. So a second example is, you know, who wants to hate on guide dogs? Peter Singer does. Singer points out that the cost of providing a guide dog to one blind person is approximately $40,000. For that same amount of money, one can prevent between 400 and 2,000 cases of blindness. You can cure between 400 and 2,000 cases of blindness, not just giving a blind person a guide dog, but actually curing blindness that would otherwise come from trachoma, a contagious bacterial infection of the eye. Singer is not theoretically opposed either to granting wishes for dying children or providing guide dogs to people living with blindness. He sees those as great goods in many cases, but he does challenge us to consider the priorities toward which our funds are directed. If you're curious about Peter Singer's personal ethics, for many, many years, he and his wife have been incrementally increasing the amount of their annual income that they give away to evidence-based, provenly effective charities. They used to give 10% away. Now they give approximately one-third of their annual income and are ratcheting up to eventually hoping to give away half of their annual income. Fascinatingly, one of Singer's students is already giving away half of his income. This student is named Matt. There are many examples I could give you from Singer's book, and I commend his books to you, but I'll share just this one with you. Matt calculated that the best way to give away a lot of money to these proven effective charities was to earn a lot of money. So after graduating Princeton with a philosophy major, he went not to graduate school in philosophy, even though he was accepted in one of the world's top programs. He instead went to work on Wall Street, which is allowing him to donate an impressive six-figure sum annually for the last few years. The more he earns, he figures, the more he has to give away to the world's most effective charities. That's just one example of many potential paths towards achieving the most good we can do. Related to this trend of effective altruism, there's an increasing uptake in organ donation from living, unrelated, anonymous donors. Donating a kidney is a relatively safe procedure, and the benefits for the recipient are very large. In 2014, the waiting list for kidneys in the United States reached the dismal milestone of 100,000 and continues to grow. The waiting list for a deceased donor can be 5 years, and in some states is closer to 10 years. The U.S. Organ Procurement and Transplantation Network started tracking the numbers of organ donations from living, unrelated, anonymous donors in 1988, and for the first 10 years, there was one total for that entire decade. In 1998, there were three. In 1999, there were six. In 2000, there were 21. The trend continues predominantly upward, passing 100 in 2008. In 2013, the last year for which information is currently available, there were 174 such donations. In a world of much sadness and despair, there are reasons for hope, as that's just one sign of increasing numbers of people feeling solidarity, not merely with the tribe of people perceived to be most like them, but instead feeling a closeness, a solidarity, a connection, an expanding, ever-increasing concentric circles toward empathy for all beings who are aware, who are sentient, and who have the capability of experiencing suffering. Now, there's a lot more to say about all of that. If you're interested in learning more, there's two websites that I would point you to in particular that are excellent starting points. The first is Peter Singer's website, thelifeyoucansave.org. You can just Google The Life You Can Save. It's an interactive application of the insights of his ethical perspective. The second is givewell.org. You can just Google GiveWell. Some of you may have heard of Charity Navigator. This is the next generation beyond Charity Navigator. It recommends the world's best underfunded charities that have proven effectiveness in alleviating poverty. And they won't even evaluate any charity that won't be fully transparent with all of its books and all of its operations. Again, to be clear, my point has not been to say that we should all adopt Peter Singer's ethics, but rather that wrestling with his perspective is one way of becoming clearer about our own convictions. And as you turn your attention to your inner wisdom, what's going on inside of you this morning, what is your reason? What is your experience? What is your conscience telling you?